Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. I'm your host, Matt Halloran. Today, we've got Chuck and Mark back, of course, and we're going to talk about the acronym WAIT. And I'm not even going to tell you what those things are, but some of these things we've already talked about before. We had a great podcast last time talking about inflation, which is one of the WAIT things. But I want to make sure that you all pay very close attention to what WAIT means and how it is going to help you invest with more clarity. Chuck, take it away.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Thanks, everyone, for being with us once again. I hearken back to December 8th of last year when our investment committee met, and we kind of asked ourselves this question, hey, can we get a fourth year in a row of these idyllic returns with low volatility? And we kind of said no. We got a little cautious and defensive just in our demeanor, always looking for great businesses throughout the year. But we developed this acronym WAIT, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, but we're actually coming up this week with the Fed, right? Let's start with the W and we'll walk through the T. We want to focus today on the T. What are we actually waiting for? And that's where we'll get to this T component. Let's talk about the W, of course, was Washington, D.C., right? Year two of a president's term historically is the worst on average. You got the midterms to deal with. A president tends to get tested in their second year. So D.C. was up in the air, Washington. The A was the accommodative Fed was going to turn aggressive. I remember when Mark and I and the team met, the Fed was talking 2 rate hikes. They're now talking 20. I mean, that's a 10x increase. Inflation, we never thought it to be transitory. We talked about that in our last podcast. It's more like World War II, post-World War II that lasted 2 years plus. But here's the T, and we're going to talk about this today. And it's one of, I think, Mark's favorite topics. He started in this business, in the tech business, and knows an extreme amount about that subject matter. But the walk through history is incredible. You go all the way back really to post-Civil War, so 1870. And we used to call them inventions. We now call them technological advancement, but it's what we're waiting for. It's when inflation comes out of apparel, whether it's the US or globally, what you have is you have technology which drives productivity. And looking for businesses that invest in it, use it to become more profitable and hire top talent, still paying them. But as long as they're more productive, you get this tailwind from technology. So that's what we're looking at. That's what we're waiting for. This is actually going to be one step closer to a series, Mark, that we're going to do on Web 3.0. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but talk a little bit about to our audience your original leap into the technology world, your understanding of businesses that not only use it, but actually develop it. I'd love our audience to hear that.
Sure. So I graduated college in 1987. And ironically, my first job out of college really was selling car phones. And I worked for a company called McCaw Communications. And of course, most people on this podcast listening probably have no idea who McCaw Communications is. And while I was working there, I was also dabbling a little bit with the stock market and learning. I had gone in 1987, I had studied for my Series 7 and my insurance license. So I had an understanding of the, I was going to go into the business. And I've told this story way back when I started doing podcasts that I looked like I was 15 and I acted like I was 9. And I didn't have 2 shekels to rub together. So how was I going to tell anybody what to do with their money when I didn't even have any money to tell myself what to do with? And so I went out and sold high tech, and it started by selling car phones. You may say, well, car phones back then weren't real high tech. Well, look at me now. So, you know, cell phones were very high tech and going to be high tech at the time. And McCaw Communications, the stock was a publicly traded stock. And McCaw Communication was bought by a very small company at that time called AT&T, which is now AT&T Wireless. And that was a very big learning lesson at the age of 22 about the power of investing and the power of technology. And of course, cell phones are an integral part of our productivity today, and they will continue to be as we move forward. And over the years, worked in high-tech companies during the early stages of what was called local area networks and wide area networks. And it was the beginning of really how computers were beginning to talk to each other and interoperability and all these big tech buzzwords, and companies like Novell and Banyan and Protean. And, you know, these are names nobody even knows who they are now because they're gone. And then some of the stalwarts like Cisco and Intel, Netscape, these were all beginning to take hold. And the 90s was the boom in technology for what's called Web 2.0, which is the internet. And the internet is, everybody's included. It's open architecture. People can communicate with each other. You can go to different websites and do all these different things. And of course, the internet has allowed for tremendous productivity improvements, which means tremendous profitability improvements, not only for companies that use the technology, but for the companies that sell the technology. And so over the years, I have invested a lot of money, client money, into technology companies. It is my passion. It is the one area that probably has done the best for our clients over the years. I've got many stories about technology companies we have owned. But now, of course, we've just hit the bubble with the NASDAQ again. And now a lot of the technology stocks are getting hammered just like they did in 2000. So now what? How's that for a tee up?
That's excellent. And I want to make this transition to talking a little bit about productivity, but what you just laid out there, because I think it's excellent. Some people conflate, if you will, meaning bring together the concept that just because technology stocks as a group may not outperform, it means that there's no new technology, and that's kind of a falsehood. So I'm going to get to that in a second. But so just kind of hang on to that thought, Mark. I wanted to read you a couple of articles here. Many of our clients are business owners. You certainly have been a business owner since the day, as you said, you stepped out of college. You never really worked for a company. You were always in business for yourself. This concept of productivity. So it's, I know it's kind of a wonky economic term. It's basically output per worker hour. And here's a couple of headlines that I just wanted to read for you. This was the Wall Street Journal, and it says, maybe productivity will save investors from inflation. Goes on and talks about the historical threat of inflation and how productivity, again, from technological advancement is that elixir. The other one was in the Washington Post, a similar time frame here earlier this year. The U.S. could be on the verge of a productivity boom, a game changer for the economy. So here's the stat I want to lay on you here. We went back, that crack research team, right? We went back all the way to 1925. And today, this is in years, Mark, the average age of what we call U.S. capital stock. So that would be fixed assets on the books of a company is 22 and a half years, higher than it's ever been. In the 40s, post-World War II, it was about 20 years. And as you said, as that boom in the 80s and 90s came through, we were down around 15, 16, 17. So what does that tell you if you looked at the balance sheet of a company and their average fixed assets, 22 and a half years in length? What would that say for companies that will be investing in productivity advancement through whatever type of means they need to get that?
I love it. I love it. Well, that's a good question. That's why I have you on.
It's one of the things we look at, right? We look at that a company that's going to invest in that next wave, if you will, of advancement within their company. So it's not necessarily, correct me if I'm wrong, the underlying technology company that you're going to buy. It could be a healthcare company or an insurance company that's using that next generation technology to become more profitable, just like your firm does, our firm. Right. So that's what I wanted to kind of lead you to, if that's okay.
Yeah. So think about it. When we make investment decisions, they're made long term. They're not made for the short term, which means that you own businesses longer term And we own a couple of companies that have been hammered in the downturn this year. It's all public information. So Square and Shopify are two companies that we own, along with AMD and Qualcomm, that are also are going to be big drivers of technology going forward, because semiconductors have become less of a cyclical play and more of a secular play. And while those stocks got hammered, we've been able to buy more and buy it on sale and yada, yada, yada. And all of a sudden you look and they're starting to move higher because they're GARP companies, companies we've talked about in the past, growth at a reasonable price. These are early stage investments for us. While they've been public for a little while, the reality is that the value of Square and Shopify probably won't happen for 5 to 10 years. And you invest in businesses just like a business owner invests in his own business longer term. But the fundamental foundation of that investment has to do with the next stage of what technological innovation will be, which will be Web 3.0, and i.e. blockchain, i.e. crypto. And I believe I have a fair amount of knowledge and experience and understanding of the blockchain for multiple reasons. A day will come where we'll talk more about that. But Web 3.0 is a major, major asset class I think is going to be very strong. Interestingly, our Web 3.0 analyst on our team has been sending me quite a few pieces of information. And one of the big things to get you kind of in a rabbit hole here a little bit is the news that's come out of MasterCard and Visa, particularly Visa creating their own wallet now, which of course is all blockchain-based crypto stuff. This is the way it's going. People prognosticate, postulate, and speculate all the time what they think. I think I'm going to go with people who know what's going on behind the scenes, and those kind of companies are preparing. It's early stage. It's like if I say Netscape, half of the people listening to this podcast have probably never even heard of Netscape. Or what was the other big one? Netscape.
Was the web browser, right?
Web browser, yeah. But yeah. Who was the other? Lycos? Remember Lycos?
I do, yes.
AOL.com.
Yeah. Okay, oh, yeah. Guys, you guys are starting to sound really old. I just want to say that right now. 90% of the people have no idea what
I appreciate the compliment.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. You're welcome. Ago, it's all experience,
right?
Brother. It's
20, 10, 20 years ago. But that's how fast technology
that's
moves.
Right. That's
right. What Chuck is getting to as we talk about the T in technology.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. And I, you brought up a really good point, Matt, because I think that the old saying, I think it was Samuel Clemens, right? Mark Twain, history doesn't repeat itself, but it surely does rhyme, right? That's been used over and over again.
Yes.
And I think this is really good. So what I want to do, Mark, I want to set up this next piece here, because I think it's going to be really important to talk about the past and then the future. And part of the reason is you have so many doomsayers, right? That they say that the world's falling apart and I don't want to invest. Back in 1904, the head of the patent office made the comment in the United States that everything that has been invented, no longer will there be any new inventions. I'm mangling that. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
You kind of understand what I'm saying. So I want to go back to four other periods in time. Then I'm going to tee this up for you. So we went all the way to 1870. So I want everyone to picture this, right? If you're reading the history books about World War I and II, you go back to the Civil War, right? That was the decade of the 1860s. Our country was fractured in two, and it was brought back together again. Think of looking out of your window and saying the next 31 years are going to be the longest bull market in history. And we had many things that changed, right? We had technological revolutions. We had railroad, we had telegraph lines, gas and water supply, sewage systems, all that stuff, which wasn't in place before. And then we had that time following the Spanish flu in World War I. We had the discovery of penicillin. We had the invention of the bulldozer. I think about the building of skyscrapers, right? They had the 1950s following the Great Depression of World War II, transcontinental flight. We had certainly heart implants, one of the longest bull markets, and of course the 80s, which you talked about. So here we sit in the 2020s, and there's this common theme, Mark, and this is what I wanted to kind of tee up, that if you look at four areas that were common, broader areas, it was transportation, energy, or power generation, which I know is near and dear to you, communications, which is certainly another one which we've talked about, and medical breakthrough. So as we get kind of into the back half of our podcast here, I wanted to you to think about some of those areas that I just mentioned that we could talk about and where technological advancement is going to be key to unearthing investment opportunities in those areas. So if we maybe pick one, I'll give you one, maybe we'll start off with energy and power generation. So here's something that I unearthed, and I want you to talk a little bit about this. Oil field service companies that have what we call digital offerings, autonomous drilling, remote operations, artificial lift digitalization. And this could actually bring U.S. shale cost down by $5 a barrel. Talk a little bit about the energy industry and its technological breakthroughs and how that could help investors understand that next wave that's going to be forthcoming just in that field of business.
Interesting. You know, it's funny. One of our investments in the energy business, they have just filed or are filing for a patent for a new form of fracking, of drilling that no one's doing. And it will reduce costs and risk in the fracking process and find more oil. But fracking certainly was a big technological breakthrough that moved the United States into being able to be energy independent. And of course, fracking is a form of drilling that allowed you, instead of go straight up and down, allowed you to go side to side. And, you know, you drill into a well straight down, you got a well, but generally when there's a well and there's oil straight down, there's also oil to the sides of that straight down. And fracking allowed us to find a lot more oil as a country. And so when you think about technological advances in oil, right, you can not only reduce the cost, but you also can find a lot more oil, which means you bring out more supply, which can also reduce the cost of the oil as well. Obviously, there's other factors associated with that. But in energy, fracking was the big major breakthrough, I think, technologically speaking. And as the oil services companies now are starting to talk more about moving into the alternative energy space and providing energy services to the alternative energy space, whether it's solar or battery power or windmills or whatever the case may be, we are going to continue to innovate in the energy space to provide lower cost energy to the world, which of course is just like computers do in technology to reduce the cost of productivity. And so energy is far on the way and has many aspects of it right now as you look at all the companies that are out now creating technologies around energy, not just in drilling, but also in solar, in batteries, etc.
Excellent. I got two more here that I know that are near and dear to your heart. So we kind of covered that energy power generation. How about financials, banks, payment processors, insurance companies, just a couple of things here for our listeners. The next frontier is going to be kind of these digital channels,
right,
for lending, customer growth, and digital assets, including the blockchain. So that's right, kind of tee up for the Web 3.0 and decentralized. But talk a little bit about that industry, the broader financials, sure, and how that could benefit from technology.
Sure. Well, okay. First, we should tell people we actually don't talk before we do these podcasts. So I actually don't know the questions Chuck is going to ask. And sometimes it scares me a little bit because I don't know what he's going to ask. But these are really good questions. These are a little bit deeper and philosophical viewpoints about bigger picture thinking, which I call top-down thinking versus bottom-up thinking. I do believe that, and here's the analogy I will use, and I'm hoping we're going to use this for a reel on the new Nepsis app. I believe that when you look at the world deglobalizing, meaning the United States is bringing manufacturing back home, and while that's going to be inflationary because it's going to cost more to build goods here in the United States and to manufacture things, semiconductors included, which are going to be a major component of that, I also think you're going to see deglobalization in financial assets, meaning you are going to see you're going to go from a open architecture, Web 2.0 kind of mentality in the financial markets to a more centralized single channel, i.e. blockchain, more private, more secure form of financial transacting. And the blockchain is going to allow you to do that. Now, this isn't getting into the crypto conversation at all. This is less about what kind of currency will be used on the blockchain. This is more about there are literal applications right now being developed on the blockchain, mortgages, insurance, development of applications, a lot of different things. Food, of course, Zest and the food on the blockchain, tracking and tracing of pharmaceuticals, of food. You know, the blockchain is going to allow a more centralized focus on tracking and reduce cost at the same time in that process, because the technology to create that will make it easier and more secure for people to transact and have access to information. Far different than open architecture Web 2.0 world. And so I think over the next 10 years, you're going to see fascinating developments in applications being used on the blockchain that will blow people's mind. Things that you can't even think about right now.
Fascinating. And you mentioned in your discourse there one other, I think, industry that's key. So we talked about energy and the transformation. There are certainly financials. Let's call them broader based. Next one, what's called healthcare. But I want to hone in on what you and I refer to as med tech. So yeah, just to give our audience just kind of a thought here, we got a $9 trillion, just the global hospital market, if you think about that. And I think about it, I'm going to use the word archaic, meaning old. Certainly the financial services business is behind the curve. The energy business has been, it's getting up to speed, but the medical, what's called industry, is woefully behind, whether it's record keeping or whatever. So just a couple of things. You got greetings from the receptionist, you got virtual appointments, you got robotic surgery, you have the ability to work around the clock. Talk a little bit about it, and this could be an insurer, somebody like a Cigna to an end user of healthcare, but what are tech innovations going to do to that industry to actually resurrect it from a technological standpoint? It's woefully in the background.
Yeah, I actually think there's a couple of things that are going on that I think are pretty intriguing in the healthcare space. And one is, of course, record keeping. A lot of that will go onto a blockchain. It'll be private and it'll be accessible anywhere as long as you're on that blockchain. Think about the cost savings on storage of paper. Think about how quickly you can access information on someone. Let's say you're on vacation in Mexico, you get injured, you got to access medical records, and you have a global network where you can access that. These are all things that are going to happen. You know, we've been in the cloud since literally 1997, 1998. I went paperless at NEPSIS in 1990, which nobody was even remotely thinking about. And it was a little more antiquated than it is today, but it's all about centralizing everything, going to one spot to get access to all your records and all of your information. We haven't had file cabinets in our firm for years, and I have advisors around the country and data all over centralized into one spot. Same thing that's going to happen in the record keeping and in the health business, in the insurance business. But the other area I think where technology is going to play a major role is in curing cancer and coming up with very specific targeted strategies using technology, using your DNA and your RNA, and figuring out what's the best way to bring cancer to an end. And so you've got in the healthcare space, quite frankly, a lot of companies that are undervalued on a value basis because everybody likes the sexy stuff and the technology companies, but there's a lot of biotech and pharma companies out there that are extremely, on a valuation basis, very inexpensive, but are doing game-changing things technologically and things that will change the world and bring us forward in the next 20, 30 years in greater healthcare. And that'll provide investment opportunities. And so when you look at an allocation like we have of energy, healthcare, technology, financials, we cover those are our major asset classes we hold, and we believe will be major benefactors of the Web 3.0 technology that's going to be coming forth.
Boy, you nailed it there, my friend. And I know we got about five more minutes left here. So I'd like to maybe switch the conversation to talk a little bit about behavioral finance and why we look at times of peril, much like if you go back the last 2 years, we had a pandemic the likes that we hadn't seen in 100 years. And at first, we didn't really know how to handle it. And so we had a major change in the way the world operates. You mentioned deglobalization that's going to come out of it. And we had this weight theme, right, Mark? Because the first three were these headwinds. But when you actually think about it, right, we're going to have the election. Whatever happens, it's going to happen on November 8th, right? So that's first of all. The Fed ultimately is going to stop raising rates, right? They can't do that forever. And that's inflation right. has always, right, subsided. It's those who are able to see through the clouds or the storm when you're in the midst of it that actually can make sound investment decisions. Right. And I just want to say, to your credit, you started doing that in the midst of COVID. And then in September, that switched to some of the holdings we have right now. Talk a little bit about just the future from that perspective and how you see it and how you see Nepsis's portfolio's position to take advantage of that.
Well, in September 2020, you're right. We began the process of starting to shift the types of businesses, the metrics we use for the businesses we wanted to own, and what the world would look like after a pandemic. You know, and pandemics happen once, you know, every two, three generations, whatever it is. I mean, they just don't happen. And I think there's a culmination of things that have been going on at that same time. And people often ask me political questions. Do you invest based on politics? Do you invest based on who's president, not president, who's in the house, yada, yada, yada. We stay out of politics. We invest in great businesses long term. If there's any sort of major shift in the fundamentals, we go to our buy and sell discipline to make our decisions for us, not the politics. But in September 2020, after the rush of money that came in, it was very clear, and we've talked on previous podcasts, how things were going to be going forward. At the same time, I was beginning to get myself kind of entrenched in the whole Web 3.0 thought process because technology is what I love. And as a firm, we own about 25 to 30 trademarks, which we've gone on to the Web 3.0 and locked down. We've locked down investwithclarity.com on the blockchain, for an example. You know, you talked about the behavioral aspect, and I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit, but let me back up to the behavioral part. The reality about investing is, in my opinion, and many would argue factual, that most investors are not long-term thinkers. Human nature is all about immediate gratification. If it wasn't, advertising wouldn't be so important. We are a society, we are wired as people to immediate gratification. And the behavioral aspects of that could have massive repercussions if you're an investor long-term. In other words, very few people have the intestinal fortitude to hold on to an investment for 10, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. And we have many companies we own that we have owned for 10, 15, 20 years. And I was talking with Perry about Visa and MasterCard. We started buying Visa and MasterCard the day they went public, right before the financial crisis, quite frankly. And I just see how they have transformed themselves over this last 15 to 20 years. Behavioral investing is very difficult because investors are short-term thinkers. This is the power of investing with clarity, the ability to understand what you own and why you own it. It is the ability to take away all the noise, take it from a foundational behavioral standpoint, but also from an empirical standpoint. I often say it's the investment philosophy and strategy that are the empirical components, and it's flexibility and transparency that are the behavioral components of investing. We call that the four keys to successful investing. And that's no more apparent than what has happened over the last 18 months. I look today and the U.S.
is Treasury Bond Index? The aggregate? The AGG?
Yes. Is down 15% year to date. Bonds.
Amazing.
You're quote unquote conservative. And I always say to people, and they say, well, that's too risky. Or, that's too conservative. What does that even mean? Those are relative terms. And as you look at what's happening, I couldn't be more excited now today about the investment opportunities laying ahead of us and the way the world is shifting into a more de-globalized marketplace, into a world of 3.0 and blockchain. And it will, make no mistake about it, alter not only the way we get information, but how we give information, and lastly, how we transact information. And I believe over the next 5 to 10 years, it'll be fun to see how all these transitions take place in those sectors that we've talked about.
Mark, as always, you hit a grand slam, my friend. I'm going to ask you, Mr. Matt, to close it out. Or what'd you think of that one?
Yeah, you know, Mark's unpreparedness really launched us into some pretty deep philosophical stuff there. I love that. So one, Chuck, great questions, right? Mark, very, very nice answers, right? Very clear, very understandable. The Web 3.0 is wildly nebulous, right? But you just gave a couple of great examples of organizations that are participating in this with foresight, as good businesses do, right? So if you're really trying to figure out what are great companies to invest in, there are a lot of aspects that you have to keep in mind, and technological advancements are a huge component in making an informed investment decision. All right, everybody. So if you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure that you do. If you know somebody who really should hear this, which is most people, just share it. It's very, very easy to do that. But for Mark and Chuck, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.